work as a family life educator for a counseling agency in Kitchener, Ontario. And I've been doing anger workshops for the last 7 years, about four of them a year, that go three nights for 3 hours each. So it's a 9-hour workshop on dealing with anger. And one of the first things I say as I began a class on anger is that I'm a practitioner. I mean, I'm dealing with anger not because somebody else said I ought to deal with anger, but I'm dealing with anger and put it together in a workshop because I want to learn how to deal with anger and to understand my own feelings about anger and some of the things that I have learned in the process of dealing with my own anger in these past years. Because I certainly grew up in a family where anger was let out in not always the most helpful ways. Now, there wasn't a lot of physical abuse, but there was a lot of verbal, and there was a lot of frightening, and a lot of warnings, and a lot of threats, and a lot of explosions of anger. I perhaps did not come into adulthood with a good, you know, with other models of how to deal with anger. And then I married someone who had grown up in the exact opposite, where anger was something that you just didn't talk about. You didn't get angry because if you got angry, somebody wasn't going to love you, including God, perhaps. And so if you were angry, you just don't feel angry. You just don't feel. There's a lot of denial on that. So we worked together pretty much in our 32 years together to deal with how do you put two different approaches to anger and find one that's more helpful, more positive. So I just wanted to, how many were here yesterday, just to get an idea? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Just a quick review on some basics and helping us become aware of anger. That anger is not just a head thing. It's all in your head. It's all in your mind. Anger has physical symptoms as well. Your hands get sweaty. Your stomach gets knotted. You get a headache. You get flushed in the face. You get all anxious. You get tense. There's a whole variety of physical signals to tell you when anger may be starting. There's a number of physical ailments that come when we begin to stuff that anger. Headaches, ulcers, colitis, migraines, arthritis. So anger is not just something that's going on in our head. But it really has some long-term effects on us if we do not deal with it in a way that helps us to understand what's going on and what we can do about what's going on and what we can do to help maintain those relationships that we think are really very important and that anger may get in the way of. So a couple of things that I want to, as a basic, is that all feelings are okay. Anger is an emotion. And like happiness, sadness, fear, whatever, they're all okay. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings don't have judgment. One of the next things that we need to remember about it is that we have choices on how we decide to act on those feelings. If I'm angry with you, I'm going to come up and kick you on the knees, or I can say, I don't like what you're doing. Or I can say, I can't take this, and I can leave. Or I could call her a whole bunch of names. There's other choices, too, that we can do with that. But I've got some choices how I can deal with my anger if I choose to be angry at someone. And that's another aspect to remember, is that no one can make me feel angry, hurt, embarrassed, disappointed, whatever, without my permission. Eleanor Roosevelt said that a long time ago, and it's made a lot of sense. It's something that we don't remember very easily because we often think somebody has a remote control to our feelings and they're making me angry. He, she, if they make me angry. It's not my fault. If only you wouldn't do what you're doing, I could be okay. But that's, you know, we've got to take some ownership here. So remember that no one can make you feel angry, disappointed, whatever, without your permission. You've got some choices. So we have a choice as to how we may get very angry. I mean, we may or may not have some choices on that. Some of that comes through what we're going to deal with in many ideas in our self-talk and awareness of today. But we have choices to how we're going to act on those feelings, which are not right or wrong. And it's that action that becomes judge. That action which is going to be either helpful or hurtful. Solve the problem or enlarge the problem. Or make it a problem that ends up in your own body. That comes out in some kind of physical symptom. So those are some basics. Another is that we talked about yesterday is that Tom Gordon came up with his iceberg theory of anger that says anger is like an iceberg. And sometimes anger is that 1/9 of the iceberg that floats above the water. And the 8/9 that's below the water are all the other feelings that have come in. And it's these feelings that are the primary ones. What's underneath the water is primary. That anger is a secondary feeling. Anger is a response to some other feeling. I'm angry because I feel rejected, hurt, put down, frightened, scared, embarrassed, whatever. And so it's helpful to get into the habit when you begin to identify your anger to say, I am angry, not you make me, but I am angry and. Anger is a perfectly acceptable feeling. To understand where we go with it, we need to know what's underneath it. I'm angry and hurt. I'm angry and embarrassed when you tell the story about me in public that I asked you not to tell. So those are some basics. Any questions on that? We're going further. Okay. What I would like to deal with today is going on with some of those nutty ideas that we have in our heads that we may not be aware of that gets in our way as we try to deal with anger. Second thing I want to deal with today is what we do about that self-talk. And third, to maybe take a look at an awareness wheel if we have enough time that can help us to tune into what's going on and what's happening. So this is just, what's on the bottom here is just some background from yesterday, a reminder. That we have some choices. We have a lot more control. We're not just that puppet hanging there, and some master puppet maker, a puppet manager, is up there pulling the strings to make me feel. How many of you wake up in the morning and think you're either your partner or your children or your coworkers have spent half an hour this morning trying to figure out some way to make things go wrong for you or to make you have a miserable day? Or how often do you wake up in the morning and think for half an hour or so how to make somebody else's day miserable? I don't think we really do it. We may end up having some input into what's happening, but I don't think, for most of us at least. Now, there's probably always some people out there that are just, you know, always, who may, by choice or by chance, have an input into what happens with your day and how, and the feelings that you choose to have about that particular situation. But we do have some choices. So, as we look at some of our nutty ideas, let me just ask, when we think about anger, what are some nutty ideas that you may have about anger? Yesterday we asked sometimes I put up graffiti sheets and I ask the class, my classes on anger, to write down any responses anonymously, and one of the titles on a sheet would be things I learned about anger at my parents' knees and other joints. And we sometimes come up with some rather interesting ideas about anger. But what are some of your ideas about anger? What have you heard?
If I'm angry, I'm a bad girl.
I'm angry, I'm a bad girl. What else?
Anger is a sin.
Anger is a sin. And what?
It's what I was taught.
Anger is a sin. That's what we were taught. Anything else?
If I'm angry, I may lose control instead of being the kind of person I really want to be.
And I've got to be in control, right? Okay, so I don't want to get angry because I don't want to lose it because I want to keep it. Okay? And sometimes, so that's one approach to control, and sometimes people may get angry because that's the way they can keep control. They scare off the other people. Mm-hmm. So there's two sides of that. There's almost two sides to many of these situations. And Neither of them are right or wrong. I mean, they're things that we've learned. They may or they may not be helpful to us. And we may want to look at some other choices we have. What else have you learned? If I get angry, what is someone going to say about me? What are they going to think about me? How are they going to feel about me? So I've got somebody peering over my shoulder or looking with binocular glasses at me all the time to see what I'm doing because they're going to put a judgment on me. And then I'm going to have to live with that judgment the rest of my life because it's painted in indelible ink. So we've got some of these, and then I get angry about somebody else judging me, and we get no response to someone else. Any other nutty ideas that we might have?
It's not ladylike.
It's not, but it's manlike?
Yeah.
Okay, so ladies are not, women are not supposed to get angry. Men, that's part of their makeup. But no for women.
It's not professional.
It's not professional, okay. Somehow there's a judgment on it. Okay. I walked into my director's office a couple of weeks ago, and he has this, we often are at odds with each other, and he often has, little poster on his wall that just got put up, and it said, "The floggings will continue until a better attitude exists among the staff." I don't find it funny. I laughed. I must admit, I laughed at first, like this, and then I thought, there must be another way of looking at that more positively. It's not. And I began to feel angry, and I was going to say something about this, and I decided I would not. Now I'm beginning to think, is he going to hear this tape? Maybe that's one way to hear about it. Okay, so we've got some nutty ideas about anger. How we respond to anger. How many of you had a really good model for dealing with anger in your growing up? How many of you had some good lessons from someone? Mom, dad, grandpa, grandma, brothers, sisters, teachers? How many had a really good model?
You mean the kind of model where you never saw them angry with each other?
That's not a good model.
I'm glad you bring that up. That's very important because that's not exactly what I meant, but no. Sometimes that's what we think. You never got mad, so you must be a good model about anger. But how to be angry in a positive way? What's George Bloch's book, The Intimate Enemy, How to Fight Fear and Love in Marriage? That was his earlier, it's been revised. I think it was out first in the 60s and it's come out again in the late 80s. A revision that has some good things to say that we'll probably always fight and we'll probably frequently get angry. But how can we do it positively without hurting ourselves or the other person? And so just never being angry is probably not very honest. But to have seen somebody get angry and to handle it without hurting self or other, or thing. I certainly didn't have very good models. And there's lots of books out now about anger. There's Albert Ellis's Anger, Living With It and Living Without It. There's Harriet Lerner, on anger. There's a book on anger by Rubenstein. There's even a couple of workbooks that have come out whose names, people's names have not been very common as yet. What's the one about women and anger?
The Dance of Anger.
The Dance of Anger. I began to think of intimate, and I thought that wasn't the word that. Thank you. The Dance of Anger. Particularly for women in dealing with anger. I think there are some other books that are even more helpful, but it gives a good, interesting background if you want to plow through her whole book. But Dance of Anger is in the library, and I think it's also on the bookshelf in the bookstore. So anger has become a topic of interest in the last five, eight years. When I started to do courses in anger 7 years ago, there happened to be a document that came across Canada from the family service agencies in Canada that listed where they were doing family life education programs and the type of programs they were doing, and we were the only one across Canada doing something in anger. And now it's done frequently around. So, what I want to look at in our time is taking a note from Albert Ellis's, and that's E-L-L-I-S. What Albert Ellis is the father of rational emotive therapy, and he's got dozens of books out, including the one Anger, How to Live With It, How to Live Without It, and a whole bunch of other books. He talks about the ABCs of nutty ideas. That, for instance, if you were stung by a bumblebee, you're stung, it immediately hurts, right? And you go from the action to a consequent feeling. And with something like stubbing your toe or being hit by a ball thrown in air or getting bit by a bee, you immediately have a feeling. But when we're in relationship with other people, it doesn't go quite that directly. And there is something in between. So, for instance, if I were standing out on the patio by the kiosk and talking to one of you, and in the midst of a quite an animated conversation, and somebody comes in and says to you, "Oh, what a lovely sweatshirt you've got on. Where did you find that?" And then you start talking about the sweatshirt and where you got it from, I'm going to stand back there and say, "Who does she think she is? What's happening? Am I that boring a speaker that all of a sudden I'm left out of the conversation and it's as if I don't exist and I was right in the midst of an important point of all the matter? How dare you do this to me? Well, just wait and see if, you know." That's not, I'm feeling what?
Rejected.
Hurt, rejected. There's a bit of anger in there, but I'm glad you got onto that first feeling. Thank you. I'm feeling rather rejected, feeling rather hurt, put out, embarrassed too perhaps. You know, what do I do now? Mm-hmm. Do I say, "Hey, wait a minute, I was here first." Or I say, "Well, what's going on with you? I mean, I've got some choices. What I would probably do is just slowly crawl." because there's some things going on in my head that says, well, maybe she really wasn't that interested in what I was talking about. Maybe I just went on too much. Maybe I'm just talking too much, and it's you know, I can be interested in it, but maybe nobody else is interested in it. I guess I'll just go find something else to do, and maybe I'll go and read a book, and I don't get interrupted, and I can go crawling off and lick my wounds. But my feeling of being hurt, rejected, is not necessarily because somebody interrupted us. It's because I'm saying some things to myself. So I go from A to B, and I go from B to C, and I'm feeling lousy. I can feel hurt, and I can feel that I'll just give in, or I could come back and say, "Hey, wait a minute, didn't your mother ever teach you not to interrupt conversations? We were right in the midst of a..." And she might be just as aggressive or assertive, and we could get into it. Pretty soon everybody in the whole patio might be watching us, and then we'd get angry because we're all embarrassed or whatever. But there's something in here that led me to the feelings that I have. And what Albert Ellis would say is that we need to not just stop with the ABC of nutty ideas, but to add a D and an E. And a D would be to dispute. To dispute B. My belief. Well, who is to say that the conversation wasn't that interesting? Maybe it's just, you know, don't being polite and responding to the request she has. I'll wait a few minutes, and then we may be able to get back, or I might be able to say, why don't we finish it at another time? And she might say, no, let me just get the information here, and I still want to hear. Or she may say, well, thank you, but I'm leaving on the next bus out on the boat. I guess I'll just have to do some thinking about it myself. I doubt if she would say, forget it. I don't want to hear from you anymore. Yeah, that was the lousiest conversation I've ever had in my life. Get out of here. Boy, am I glad you came up and saved me. No. So we want to be able to dispute the belief that's led to this hurt and rejection and to say, oh, this is inconvenient. Or maybe she's running off on the next bus and wanted to ask that question quickly because she's not going to be able to ask it again. So that I may come up with a different belief, and I may then come up with a new emotion. I may not be so hurt and rejected anymore. I may be just disappointed, inconvenienced, irritated, or patient, or recognize in this kind of situation things like this will happen. So I've got some choices. But it's partly what I'm saying to myself up here. There's a statement that it's not what other people say to you that matters. It's what you say to yourself after they stop talking. It's an important thing to remember. What do you say to yourself when somebody else stops talking? Well, they don't really mean that. What if I walked up to you and gave you a bouquet of flowers, roses, a dozen red roses? What would you feel?
Good.
Okay, what would you feel?
I wonder why.
Okay, what might you feel?
You wonder why? What might you feel?
Surprise.
What might you feel?
Probably delighted.
Delighted? What might you feel?
Did you have a load of roses that you need to unload?
Great. See the variety of responses we got? Some are similar, but a lot of them different. So people will respond differently to the same situation. Maybe from their own experience. Maybe from the surprise and shock of the moment. Maybe because of something they've heard. Maybe from what in that experience. And all these sort of get filtered through your belief system up here in you. Well, why are you giving me those roses? What do you really want? Or, wow, what a marvelous surprise. It's great, how'd you know that roses are
something I really wanted?
So, if we want to look at what do we tell ourselves and what are some other choices? And if you get through and you begin to feel, we talked yesterday about some of those beginning feelings that let us know that our emotional level is not down here at the mild, but it's growing to moderate, or maybe it's zooming up the elevator up to rage immediately, the high emotional level. And I want to catch it before it pops through the roof, before I lose my cool, before I become temporarily insane, which is what anger is sometimes called, because when we're angry, we lose contact with rational thinking. We are so enraged that we cannot, it's as if we turn the switch off on our thinking, our logic, and our reasoning ability. And we may have to take that time out to go and renew ourselves and think, now, what is really happening here? What else might I see? Okay, let me use another illustration. You gave a birthday party for someone. It could be your child, it could be your partner, it could be a good friend, it could be a coworker. But anyway, you made this birthday party, and you made an extra special birthday party. You wanted to make it special, but you ended up making it more. You spent more money on it than you wanted to. You spent more time on it than you wanted to. You put more into it, and it made a bigger mess than you wanted it to. And when the birthday party is all over, your friend says, that was a dumb birthday party. What are you going to say to yourself? Or the friend? What do you think would be likely responses for somebody who has thrown this great birthday party to say when the receiver of that birthday party says at the end, That was a dumb party.
Well, thanks a lot.
Notice the tone of voice. I mean, thanks a lot are good words. But body language and tone of voice change it into something completely different. Okay, what else might somebody say?
I thought so too. This is a lot more expense and effort than I wanted to go into why we both clean up.
Okay. You've been thinking. What else?
I'll never do that again.
I'll never do that again. What else?
Sorry you feel that way.
Sorry you feel that way. What else might someone say?
I won't invite you next time.
Okay, I'm not going to invite you next time. What else?
Why did you think so?
Why? How many of you remember as teenagers, whenever your parent asked you the question, why did you do this? What were your answers?
I don't know.
Of course. There's basically three responses that kids most often give. I don't know. Because, and shrug of the shoulder. Don't have to say a word, but. Okay, so we may ask the question why, and we may get the same kind of response. I don't know. Because. Okay, any other responses you might have to that? So many of those were really aimed against, I was aiming against the other person. I'll never invite you again. Well, thank you. What an ungrateful lout you are. Okay, why do you suppose the birthday person might have said, that was a lousy birthday party, let's go over it. Now, what's the birthday person might be thinking?
The person who gave it was so frazzled that there wasn't much fun out of their best friend.
Okay, and they realize that they may have really, it was a big effort for the friend. Okay, what else might the birthday person be thinking that caused them to say it was a lousy party?
They might be embarrassed, attention focused on them.
Mm-hmm. Embarrassed to have all that attention. Mm-hmm. Embarrassed to have their age be known.
Yeah.
You invited the wrong people.
There was somebody there that I didn't want.
Like there.
Or somebody that I wanted there that wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Any other reasons?
Didn't go long enough,
sure. Or it went too long, either one.
Wasn't good enough.
Yeah, it wasn't the kind of birthday party you had envisioned. Mm-hmm. There were some other expectations there that may not have been verbalized. The birthday is over and you're going to have to wait another whole year before anything special like that happens again. Just too overwhelming. Okay, think of those comments that the birthday person said now. How many of those are really aimed at the birthday giver? Basically, they were independent of the birthday giver. Mm. So sometimes we tend to take some things very personally that are not meant at all personally. The birthday person missed someone, didn't want to admit a birthday, doesn't want to wait another year, didn't like the attention, wanted more attention, got some stupid gifts, you know, whatever. All of them, their own feelings, and yet the birthday giver says, that's the last time I'm going to invite you, took it all very personally. So, how do we break that and to let people own their own feelings? I often tell parents and parent groups that I do, that one of the helpful pieces of equipment that every parent ought to make, and I think it's not just parents, I think it's each one of us, and that is, we ought to make ourselves an invisible shield. You know the kind of shield that the knights of old wore when they were fighting with spears and such? You wear the shield and have your family crest on it and all that. Well, I think it would be helpful for each one of us to have one of these shields, that whenever somebody is starting to say, oh, you again, or don't be so dumb, or I hated that, why do you always, how can you never, I mean, that we can put this shield up and let all these negative things that can enrage us hit the shield and fall off and not stick to me. Then we can deal with them a little bit better. We won't have to go through so much despair and anger. So part of anger control is being able to recognize that some other people will have ways of saying things that may be interpreted differently than what how I might interpret. I might interpret that that was a dumb party as, well, that's the last time I'll ever make a party for you again. Or I might interpret it as you were really disappointed about something. Or it's difficult to have the birthday over and it just goes into an ordinary 364 days now until the next big event for you. So that we can recognize some different ways of looking and revise those nutty ideas, the beliefs that we have, that everybody ought to agree with me, that they ought to know, if they love me, then you ought to know what it is I want you to do for me. That I shouldn't have to tell you, you should just know. How many of you have a crystal ball that tells you what somebody else is thinking or what somebody else wants? Yeah, good question. Where does that idea that we should know come from? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Because we live with someone a long time, we think they should know.
Yeah, but what makes us think that? That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. What really makes us think that somebody else ought to know what I want? And how do we revise that thinking? How do we dispute the belief that somebody else ought to know what I need, what I want, and so I don't have to tell them? Some of you know my husband, who's also Dreams and Courses here. 7 years ago, shortly after we moved to Waterloo, Ontario, and he was chaplain in campus ministry, he would meet a circle of people that I wouldn't know, and then we'd be invited there, and he would go around introducing me, and he would say, this is my wife, Kathy, with a K. How do you feel? To me?
Yeah, you bet.
About this high? Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly, I mean, it hasn't happened before. And that was certainly what I was feeling too when I wanted to get out from underneath there. But I knew enough that it was not a place, that was not a time to make a row, to deal with the issue and just get your hand off me. I am not your little kid. Our daughters are even bigger than that. But I'm also old enough and involved, busy enough that I'm often on overload, and by the time that we would be alone, I'd forget about it. So the next time we'd go out again, he would say, this is my wife, Kathy, with a kid. What am I going to remember? So it must have happened a half a dozen times. And finally, we were walking up the steps to somebody's house that I didn't know, and I, wait a minute, when you introduce me, would you please not pat me on the head? And it doesn't matter to me whether people spell Kathleen with a C or a K or an R-Y-N or an E-R-I-N-E or whatever way they can spell it. And he says, oh, do I do that?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. He said, okay. And he's not done it since. So, I mean, sometimes it can be quick learners. So that idea that they ought to know what I do or don't like didn't work in this situation, and it doesn't work in very many. If it works, it's strictly by accident. And so if there is something that's happening that you don't like, find a convenient time to let the other person know what it is that you don't like and what you would prefer. Because they don't know. Can reduce a lot of levels of anger. And we don't need to carry those around. Albert Ellis also says that whenever we get angry, it's like we swallow a marble, a steel marble, heavy. And we swallow this marble and it settles down in our stomach. And then we get angry again, and we swallow another marble, and it settles down in our stomach. And pretty soon, we carry around this whole load of marbles, and it's weighing us down, and we don't have a lot of energy, and we're getting angrier, even more often, because all these people are doing these dumb things to me, without realizing that sometimes we have to release those marbles and deal with them and figure out a way to resolve the problem. Now, we're not always, not every situation is going to be one that we can plan it ahead. But for those situations where we can plan ahead, and probably in everyone's life, there are certain things that repeat themselves, that raise our emotional level, that reaches anger, right? Can you think of those in your life? A lot of them will be very individual ones that may only happen once. And then you can deal with it in general or specific, and you can deal with it in specific and it may carry over in general. But it's not a guessing game. And that's where we need to take our ownership of our feelings to identify that feeling. And if we just stick with the anger, we will never really be able to deal with what's all happening because we don't know, why am I angry? So we might do a very quick trip ourselves right now and take a couple of minutes and think about the last time you really felt anger. And when you can get that situation in your mind, I'll give you a little time. When you can get that situation in your mind, I'll ask you the next question. Last time you were angry, you were in contact with somebody else who was angry. Either one. I have a friend who. Got a situation. What's that feeling underneath it? I am angry. I'm angry in. What's, there's lots more feelings than these. What else am I feeling in my anger? What else are you feeling in your anger? Get in touch with the feeling. Mm-hmm. What is it I want? What is it I want? In other words, what's the demand or what's an expectation? What do I want in this situation? What I want from the other person, what I want for the other person, what I want with the other person. When the situation occurs, what's my usual response? What do I tend to do? When I'm angry, I fill in the blank. I yell, scream, fight, kick, leave. Go read a magazine. Scrub the toilet with their toothbrush. Sorry, that disrupted your thinking.
It's a new one.
I'm
trying
to get it. Okay, when I know what I usually do, let me think now, and hindsight is always better than when we think back over it, we can come up with lots better ideas. What else could we do? What's another choice? What's another option?
One thing I do is write it out.
Okay. That can help you to look at it. You've got another mode of information coming into your awareness. It's not just thinking, it's seeing it on paper. You're reading something. What other choices do I have? What are my expectations? What are my demands? And how do I let the other person know what I need? Some new choices. Still puzzled about some things.
Mm. Yeah, what I was puzzled about, and I realized until now, is that a lot of it's been fun. Well, I'm angry.
Okay.
Because I see the last two times I was angry, and how I respond to children when I'm angry, and my child, beside your ranger. Be a close child of his or a colleague or a coworker, you know, there's a good chance that that person may not even know I'm angry. Mm-hmm. You know, that I'm angry and yet I'll make suggestions and simply laugh. And, you know, so they never realize I'm angry yet somehow they come to resolution without even knowing I'm angry. But children, there's no question, they know I'm angry. And you know, sometimes, I mean, it's usually channeled fairly well, but I mean, I would act feeling like this. Suddenly I had this feeling I've got a split personality.
Okay. Yeah. And sometimes we just feel we have to deal with kid gloves on for people with whom we work because that's where our paycheck comes from and we don't want to alienate jobs are hard enough to find. I really enjoy the work I'm doing. You know, there's a whole variety of reasons that we may respond more positively to someone at work with whom I may feel a bit of resentment, anger, disappointment, whatever it is. And there's also a good chance that what has happened at work ends up getting focused on a kid at home or a partner at home. Because, what is it, Robert Frost said, home is where when you go there they have to take you in. That home is supposed to be a safe place, accepting place, and we may not be aware of it, but I mean, it's a little thing that triggers it, but we respond with a cannon instead of a pea shooter, because there's a whole load of other stuff we're carrying along, and that gets shot out as well at the unsuspecting person. Yeah. So that's another thing to think about. Can I leave my feelings, my anger, my, what's the word I want to look for? Frustrations with someone at work, and can I deal with home at home? Sometimes we take home to work, and things may not be going well at home, and then we bark out things to people at work, and it can go both ways. How do we deal? Do I deal with you, the things I have to deal with you, and with you, the things I have to deal with you, and I don't mix the two of them up. I don't put my anger at you on somebody else and my anger at you on someone else, but then I deal more specifically and directly with the issue, and not gunny sack. You know what I mean by gunny sack? I mean, I grew up in the days when feeds and such came in gunny sacks. I'm not sure it's come in paper bags now or it comes in boxes or whatever. But it's kind of, you stuff things in and you keep stuffing until you can stuff no more. You push one more thing in and the side pops out and everything bursts out. But sometimes the way we deal with our anger, we keep stuffing it inside. No, I'm not angry. I'm not angry. And then I blow off. Rather than dealing with it in little spurts, if I have something that, you know, that's not working well with you and me, then I need to be able to deal with you and say, I have a problem. I'm uncomfortable with. And notice I'm using the word I. Not you. You got a problem. You ought to be better. You should know. And what makes you think? Which is a put down. Sarcasm, ridicule, and embarrassment, I feel, have no place in relationships. I'm not sure that there's any. It's one of the few things I'm not sure that there's ever a positive outcome to sarcasm, ridicule, and embarrassment. Sometimes you can laugh at being embarrassed together, but when you think about it a little bit later and you think, oh dear. I mean, when somebody intentionally embarrasses you. Now, there may be times that things just happen that are embarrassing that I may cause to myself, and then I have to deal with that. I can't blame it on anyone else. But if I intentionally embarrass you by saying something or whatever to untrue you, that's dirty pool on my side. And you have every right to be angry, justifiably angry at me. And you may want to yell, Kathy, I want you to stop. Or you may come and punch me in the nose. You may get up and walk out. Or you may start whispering things about Kathy to other people. Did you know? And then we're fighting each other. That's the kind of thing. There's many ideas that we have that that somebody else ought to be perfect. They ought to know what I want. They ought to know what I feel. They ought to know what I expect of them without my ever telling them. One of the exercises I have parents do is to make work personally themselves, if there's two parents together or one, whoever is working on it. What are our family limits and expectations? What do I expect of myself? What do I expect of my partner? What do I expect of my kids? What do they expect of me? What do they expect of each other? And then put that aside and meet with them face to face at their school age and older and to say, what can help us to live more happily in this house together? What limits and expectations do we have for each other that we ought to know about? I'm not going to come in with my paper all scribbled up and say, now this is what it's going to be. That's my homework. I mean, that's to get me tuned into what I want to think about. But I think I want to gather the people together and say, okay, what's going to work for us in this situation? When we get angry, when you expect me to know something that I don't know, when you expect me to do something that I don't know about, when you have expectations for me that I am not aware of, how can I fulfill them for you? We're intentionally planning to fail. If you let me know what you expect, what your demands are, what your expectations are, then I would have a better chance of working something out. 90% of the demands that we have for each other are probably irrational anyway. And maybe only 5% of them that really deal deeply with our deeply held values and beliefs need to be acted on. Now, that percentage may vary for some other people. So we want to look at the nutty ideas we have, and what do we tell ourselves? And how does that help me in dealing with my anger? I know people who get angry and really get all tightened up when the telephone rings 5-10 minutes before supper time. Damn phone, why is it ringing now? Well, they don't know it's... It could really happen a lot in our household, too. I remember when our second daughter was still at home, and we would eat at different times, because sometimes I would have a meeting I'd have to leave early for, so we might eat at 5:30, and other times I'd be coming back late from something, we might eat at 6:30. And our daughter had one friend who liked to call her after supper, and they always ate at 5:30. She knew that we varied, and she tried to figure out what it was, but she always kept getting off. So if we'd eat late, she'd call late. If we ate early, she'd call early. And if that were the kind of, I could have ended up saying to our daughter, Sierra, you tell Claire never call her again. I don't want to hear that phone ring. But I could also realize she couldn't guess when we were going to be late or change our schedule. So all we needed to do was for Sarah to say, this is one of those crazy meals. We're just sitting down to eat. I'll call you back. Rather than for me or for my husband to get a heart attack and say, okay. What's the self-talk and what are those nutty ideas? And how does that help us with anger? Got some conversation? As you thought about your situations, and the little exercise dealing with your own issues or somebody else's issues of anger, how might ABC of Nutty Ideas or self-talk help you in revising what's going on in your thinking?
Mm-hmm. I know quite often at work I go into the other room and the phone rings. Seems like whenever I get up out of my seat to go in another room, the phone rings. And every once in a while I catch myself saying, why did they wait until I go to the other room to call her? And then the self-talk is, Julie, they don't know that you went in the room.
Okay.
And I constantly do that. I always have to talk to myself.
And as long as you answer yourself with, they really don't have a spyglass on you, you say, oh, she's off her desk and into the next room. Now I better dial quickly. But you've got some self-talk that will eventually take over the other one. Maybe you don't know.
You know, my issue was an issue of bad timing. That's what you just talked about it, me too. It's just, I think I have a tendency to assume that, you know, others are going to want to respond to me where I am, rather, and there was a lack of patience or understanding of where the other person might be. Just, you know, just the example of, you know, a husband watching the ball game for 3 hours and you want to talk to him, you know, and trying to get your timing into his timing.
Yeah, and we may have to plan ahead there or recognize this is, you know, we have the hockey, all the hockey playoffs up in Canada, and I hear that there is more violence. There are more reported cases of abuse reported at the time of hockey playoffs in Canada than at any other time.
I think we heard that about a football game.
Yeah.
The Broncos.
It could be about
They said that about the Super Bowl, but then the next day in the newspaper, they said that's not true.
No?
Well, maybe it may vary.
Statistics don't point that out.
It may vary with different locations and such. And it may be that, you know, it's not just that particular time, but that's just the last straw that breaks, you know, that breaks the camel's back. I mean, it's happened all along for a long time. It's not just happening at playoff time, but being ignored and shut up and get out of here, all that kind of stuff, and perhaps the addition of a lot more booze at that time adds more problems. And the person finally saying, I've had enough of this, I'm going to report it, I'm not going to take anymore. There's another way of looking at awareness. I think awareness, we need to recognize what's really happening before we can start to do something about it. And I think, is it Bill Lennon, may also be dealing with this on couple communication to talk about the awareness wheel. And that there's the issue, and that we can put down the issue of anger. And that we have another wheel of awareness around that's got five spokes that goes out, 1, 2, 3, 5. And that as we look at what's happening, we need to take in what we get through the senses. And what's through the senses is what we see, it's what we hear, it's what we touch, taste, smell. And I can see you putting your nose up and walking, intentionally walking by without greeting me as I say good morning to you when we're walking down the path. I see and I don't hear. I have an interpretation. Am I going to get it on? Interpretation, that's what am I thinking about it? Well, what's gotten you so stuck up? Stand back. No, it's that nutty idea in me that's saying. They're intentionally trying to snub me. And then that follows with an emotion. I feel something. I feel outraged. I feel put down. I feel rejected. I feel uncared for. And I have some intentions. I want to get back at you. And that's my want. And I'll say, well, two can play this game as well as one. So the next time you ask something of me, I'm going to say, did you say something? Were you talking or did somebody open up a window? And that I will want to take action. I'll want to do something. And I'll probably put my want into action. I'll do what I want to do. May not help the relationship any. I may, if I can get back into, out of my anger and get back into thinking again, I may say, well, what did I really see? Well, they really didn't have their nose up in the air, but they had a bunch of papers in their hand. Or it looked like they were crying. Or it looked like they were scratching their head deep in thought. So if I see or hear something else, maybe they're mumbling something to themselves, preoccupied. My interpretation might be differently. I'll think, oh, he probably didn't even see me. I don't think there was anything intentional in that snub. They're probably preoccupied. and I'll have a different emotion. I'll be disappointed, perhaps. I may be puzzled, but I won't be outraged and furious and vengeful. My intention might be, I wonder if there really, if something bad has happened, I wonder if there's a problem that I can help with. So I might have some different intentions that will lead me to some different actions. I might go back and say, are you feeling okay? You look a little bit burdened. Is there something I can help with? And there'd be a lot different ending to that story, right? A lot different use of energy of mine. I don't have to get all outraged and fired up and ready to blast them in this, in that second time around. So what do I really see and hear? What's really going on that might lead me to a different emotion? So you've got a couple ways to process what's coming through. Yes?
So question, would you say there was ever a time that a more aggressive or more forceful expression of anger would be appropriate? I mean, it's...
Okay, let's think about a situation. Can we come up with a situation in which, what might be a more forceful expression of anger? Stop. Hitting's not allowed. I respect myself enough that I will not allow myself to be dumped on or beaten up in any way. I need to leave. I will see you in 15 minutes if you want to, or half an hour if you want to talk over what the real issue is, but I am not going to stay around to be assaulted. Now, you could say that with a lot more. And I'm not calling the other person any names. I'm not adding any more fuel to his/her fire of anger. I'm protecting myself. I respect myself too much to allow myself to be yelled at, called names, have the potential of being hurt. I need to leave to think more about this and for both of us to cool off. Let's talk about it later. Now, I could also thumb my nose at the person and turn around with a scowl on the face and stomp off and slam the door and maybe kick a chair on the way out. Maybe a way of exiting, but it's still leaving some, it's still adding some more fuel to the other person's fire and disrespect to them. Not said anything to them.